we're holding on Lamed Vav Amud Beis, 9 lines from the end of the narrowest lines. The line begins, 10 lines rather, actually, the line begins Dar Isa. We started talking about, the Mishnah had said that there's various cases where the special rules for onus and mefata don't apply. In the first half of the Mishnah, there are cases where we have no particular reason to think that the woman is still a basula, because those rules apply only when she's a naira basula, as it says in the Pesukim, what we're going to learn later in the parak, and we've learned before, that according to the Chachamim also when she's a ktana, but in any case, everybody agrees she has to be a basula in order for the knas to be in effect. So the Mishnah had mentioned, among others, a giyura, and it says, the Mishnah had mentioned, among others, a shvuya, a woman who had been taken captive by the goyim, whereas was discussed at great length in the previous parak, you have the concern that she may have been raped by them, and therefore that she's no longer a basula. So now, we said in the Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda had said that no, Shvuya, who was redeemed, harei b'kdushasa, she still has her full kedusha of before, meaning that if she's a bas koyin, she would still be able to continue to eat truma. We're not concerned about the possibility that she was raped by somebody who was also to have relations with her, and therefore she still has the full kedusha of a bas koyin. So we discussed that Rabbi Yehuda might be, so Rabbah had said that Rabbi Yehuda might agree in principle that there is the concern that she's lost her basulim, and therefore he would basically agree with many of the dinim that we learned in the previous parak on the subject, but here we would say he doesn't want her to lose the possibility of knas, because in case somebody else, in case a yid later on is ma'anis or mafat to her, we don't want the guy to get off scot-free. So for that purpose only, maybe we'll assume that she is in fact still a basula. So, in other words, we had two possibilities. We had Rabbi Yochanan saying that Rabbi Yehuda is saying in general that across the board we consider her to still have her kedusha of kohona, and we have Rabbi saying that not necessarily. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda says it only in this one case of onus and mafate. So the Gemara says Omalei Abaya. So Abaya says to Rabbi, the time of Rabbi Yehuda Hocha Shaloyeh Choyte Niskohu. So you're telling me that Rabbi Yehuda's reason over here is based only on the concept of Loyeh Choyte Nisker. In other words, that we did that little piece yesterday at the end, but I guess we may as well repeat it. We're really holding the sovereign of Yehuda Victor Shostakaima a few lines down. But anyway, so you know what? Okay, fine. Let's just recap that part. So Rabbi Yehuda, so Abaya says, how can you say that Rabbi Yehuda is saying Shavuya Choyte Nisker? V'hatanya Rabbi Yehuda Amis Shavuya Shemishpes Harei B'Kedusha. So doesn't Abaya say that Rabbi Yehuda says that a Shavuya who was redeemed, who was captured, still retains her Kedusha not only as far as Onus and Mefata, but even as far as the Ksuba. Afilu Bas Eser Shonim Ksubasa Masayim. That even if she's 10 years old, meaning far older than the age at which her basulim will no longer grow back. We said in the previous mission and in this mission that that would be 3 years old. Then nevertheless, ksubasim osayim, the ksuba is still 200. V'hasamai shaloyeh choyte niskerita. There's no shaloyeh choyte nisker. There's no choyte involved in her getting married. And we're still saying that Rabbi Yehuda is considering her to be a full basula. Otherwise, you should say it's a ksuba of only 100. And the answer is Hasanami. There also, you could say, in a certain sense, there's a certain degree of lo yehi choyte nisker, in the sense yoma mimne ivoy nasvila. If we downgrade her ksuba to 100, then, in other words, so you say in effect that we're saying she has a chazaka, that she has had relations. Then a regular Yisrael may not, even a Yisrael who's allowed to marry her, may not want her. He may say, why should I bother? I can marry a Basula instead. He may be repulsed by the idea that we're assuming that she was forced to have relations with a goy. Whatever the case, so Rabbi Yehuda might still say that we're going to keep her ksuba at 200. Just that itself will improve her marriage prospect, that it tells people that there's a good chance she's still a basula. So we could say, as far as that, and as far as onus and mefata, then Rabbi Yehuda is saying we still consider her a basula, but maybe not for other purposes. Okay, Now, the Sogod of Yehuda B'Tishos HaKaima, now the question becomes the other way around. Are you telling me, and this question would really be more according to Rabbi Yochanan, are you telling me that Rabbi Yehuda holds she still has her full Kedusha of Kohona, that we're not so concerned that she may have, that the Goy may have forced her to have relations with him. V'hatanya, we learn in a Braisa, apodes ha-shvuya yise'ena, if a man, even a Kohen, redeems a shvuya, yise'ena, then afterwards he's allowed to marry her. So poida means, in other words, that he probably paid out money to the Goyim to free her from captivity. But if he's one of the people who gives edus on her, if he's one of the people who gives edus on her lo yise'ena, then he's not allowed to give edus on her. Now it sounds like we're saying if he did both, he redeemed her, and now he's coming to Beis Din and saying, you should know I was around at the time, and I know that she wasn't violated by the goyim. So we're going to see in a second that's not what the braisa means, but that's what it sounds like. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a ben kach or ben kach lo yiseena, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying either way he's not allowed to marry her. So before we get to Rabbi Yehuda, before we get to understanding Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, first we need to understand the opinion of the Chachamim. You seem to have a contradiction in what the Chachamim themselves are saying. Amrit hapodes hashvoya yiseena. First you say he redeems her, then he's allowed to marry her. In other words, that once he redeemed her, then we're not concerned that maybe she was raped. V'hadatanim made b'lo yisena. Then it's saying if he's made on her, which again sounds like the same person who redeemed her is now coming to testify in Beis Din lo yisena. Then all of a sudden we're saying he can't marry her. What's the logic? We shouldn't be made b'lo yisena because he comes and says edus on her. Therefore, that makes things worse. And now he can't marry her. What's the logic? And the answer is holei kasha. That part is not. Or Tosfos says the question is really it sounds like if he redeems her and doesn't say edus about her, then he's fine. But if he redeems her and says edus about her, then it's no good. What's the logic? So the answer is holy kasha. That's not a problem. Holy karma, because what the chachamim and the braisa mean is a purdas ashruya umeyid bo yisena means just the opposite. If he does both. He redeems her. He pays money to the goyim to get her to buy her freedom. And afterwards, he goes and says edus on her. That in fact that they hadn't touched her while she was with them. Then he would be allowed to marry her. But made bakidi. But if he marries her, but if he says edus for free, not having put his money where his mouth is, lo yisena, then he wouldn't be allowed to marry her because then we're concerned that maybe. Then we're concerned maybe that he's testifying falsely, that he's saying, he's coming and telling us that she wasn't raped because he's thinking to himself, I'm a Kohen, I would like to marry her. If I don't tell Beis Din that, they're not going to allow me to marry her. So therefore he may be saying that falsely, or maybe not even blatantly falsely. It may not even be that he knows for a fact he's lying. It may be more along the lines of like he's assuming. Whatever the case, as we'll see in a couple of lines in the Gemara, it's different if he paid money for her, but we could say the Chachamim are saying that if he only gives edus, then he can't marry her. Okay, mekomokum kasha v'Rabbi Yehuda. Still though, the question is, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that either way lo yisena, implying Rabbi Yehuda takes it as a given that she may well have been raped by the goyim while she was in captivity. Yet in our Mishnah, he's saying that she still has her kedusha, and Rabbi Yochanan understood that to mean across the board that Rabbi Yehuda would disagree with the whole concept of shvuya discussed in the previous parak, and would say that it's fine. He would say, like we said in the Gemara yesterday, like Rabbi Doisa, that the likelihood is that the goyim at most molested her, but not that it actually got to the level of rape. So what is it? What does Rabbi Yehuda hold? So the answer is, I'm going to papa aim Rabbi Yehuda on a ben kach a ben kach yiseena. So the papa says, okay, you may have to change the wording of the braisa. Say that Rabbi Yehuda says either way, whether he actually paid money for her or whether he just gave edus for her, either way he is allowed to marry her. So Rabbi Yehuda's opinion would be consistent according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Huna, Rabbi Yehuda, Amala Olam Kit Katani. Rabbi Yehuda says you don't need that. You could say the Braisa remains as written, that Rabbi Yehuda is saying either way he can't marry her. How does that fit with his opinion in our Mishnah? Because Rabbi Yehuda is not telling us his own opinion on the subject. He's arguing with the Chachamim and telling us what he thinks they should. He's saying, as far as I'm concerned, either way I hold, let's say, again, we're following Rabbi Yochanan's understanding that Rabbi Yehuda is saying, I don't believe that the goyim raped her at all. I believe, like Rabbi Doi said, a maximum they may have done is a miyachlo ben dadeha, and therefore there's no reason to ask her anything. So as far as I'm concerned, the goyim could marry her anyway. Elo l'didchu, but according to you, Chachamim, who are concerned that the goyim may have raped her, then according to you, it should be that either way he can't marry her. Why are you distinguishing between whether he paid money for her or not? V'rabbanon, so what are the Chachamim answer to that? They answer, the difference is, Akhoides Hashvuya, who made ba, the difference is, if he actually paid money for her, and afterwards he's giving Eidos that in fact she wasn't harmed by the Goyim, Yisa'ena, the reason why we allow her to marry, the reason why we allow him to marry her, even though he's a Koyin, because we can assume that a person is not going to throw away his money for nothing. Why would he have to be putting in all the money to do pidyon shvuyim? Of course, I mean, pidyon shvuyim is a big mitzvah, but still, if it wasn't that he has the possibility of marrying her, he might not have paid as much. He might have just gone and raised money from other people rather than giving it all out of pocket. So there's a high likelihood that in fact he is telling the truth, and that in fact that she wasn't raped by them, which the Taz points out. I mean, it's in effect what we're saying is, as far as his Eidos, we're going to discount that. We're going to say that his Eidos may not be true either way. But it's not, when we say that he's not going to throw away his money, the point is, after all, he has no way of knowing what happens if afterwards, when he claims that she wasn't raped, she comes in front of Beis Din and says, actually, I'm sorry to tell you I was. Then for sure he's thrown away his money, and then it comes out that all the money he spent on her in order to be able to marry her is not going to work out because he's a Kohen and he's not allowed to marry. So now when he's putting his money where his mouth is, then there's a much higher likelihood that he knows that that's not going to be a concern, that she's going to admit that she's going to admit to it, and therefore that makes it much more likely that what he's saying is true after all. On the other hand, made ba kadi, but if he's saying Aegis without having paid money for her, lo yisana, then we're saying he shouldn't marry her, shema ain of nasan ba, because after all he may have set his eyes on her, he may be lying, or at least bending the truth or whatever, in order to be able to marry this girl, and he being a Koyan, if she was in fact raped by the Goyim, he would be also to do that. So therefore, since there's no money involved, then basically he has nothing to lose, because what's the worst that could happen? She could contradict him. Okay, so the Beis Din is not going to say that he's an out and out liar. They're going to say, okay, you know, you weren't there 24/7. You don't know everything that happens. She, of course, knows much better what happened to herself. So there's no incentive for him to necessarily be telling the truth, and therefore we have to be concerned that maybe in fact he's not. That is why the Chachamim, so Rabbi Yehuda is telling the Chachamim, you seem to be inconsistent. The Chachamim would answer Rabbi Yehuda that in fact there's a special reason why, if he actually paid money for her, why we should believe him versus if he didn't. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Huna Bered Rabbi Yeshua is saying, the point is that we don't have to correct the text of the Braisa. We can, in fact, say that Rabbi Yehuda would say that either way he's allowed to marry her. He wouldn't hold that distinction between whether he paid or not, and that would be consistent with Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in the Mishnah, namely that when we say that she retains her kedusha, means not only as far as the dinim of onus and mafata and marriage, like Rabbi says, but across the board, even as far as truma and even as far as other things. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Rami led a papa bashmul lo Rabbi Yosef. Here's another contradiction that Rabbi Papa bashmul brings to Rabbi Yosef against Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, or again, specifically according to Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. The sabar Rabbi Yehuda b'kedushas ha'kaima. So you're telling me that Rabbi Yehuda holds that she still retains her kedusha. meaning, again, that we're not concerned that the goy may have raped her. V'hatanya, but we learn in a brisa. Now, the contradiction. We're gonna have to go through a few lines before we get immediately. The brisa is gonna start talking about a separate issue, and then we're gonna get back to something that bears on our situation over here. So the brisa says, "Hagiyodas chenis gaira v'ros adam." If a woman becomes a giyodas, and on that same day she has a flow of blood. Now, obviously she becomes a nida. And obviously, before she became a Jew, the concept of nida on a daraisa level doesn't apply. The question is like this. When it comes to a Jewish woman who has a flow of blood that makes her nida, we say that Rabbanon talks about it at the beginning of Masechta Nida. There's a period of time before that when we consider that she may have been tamei. I think Gemara discusses over there various angles on why that is. One of them being the basic reason being because the blood makes her tamei as soon as it comes out of the uterus, but she's not going to realize it until it actually flows out of her body. So what happens is therefore, so you have a machlokes over there between Shammai and Hillel and the other Chachamim. For how long beforehand do we assume that she may potentially have been tamei, which is relevant as far as if she's been handling truma or kodshim, will those retroactively be tamei? So the halacha is that what we do is we say it's 24 hours earlier or back to the last bedikah, whichever is less. So if she finds herself a nida at 12 p.m. on a Tuesday, then we say that any taharis that she handled from 12 p.m. on Monday are tamei misafek. But if in between, if sometime during that 24 hours that she had done a bedikka, then we say that back to the last bedikka. So she did the bedikka on Monday 5 p.m. Then fine, any taharis that she handled on Monday between 12 and 5 are fine, because obviously if she had become nida during that time, if blood had come out of the uterus, she would have caught it in a bedikka. But anything from 5 p.m. on Monday until 12 p.m. on Tuesday is going to be retroactively tough. So this is called Me'es La'es and M'Pkida L'Pkida. So now the question is, this woman who became a Giyotis, what are the rules as far as her? So if she toveled and became a Giyotis at 12 o'clock, later on that same day at 5 o'clock, she finds that she's nigger. So now between 12 and 5, she was already a Giyotis. She was able to handle Taharis. What happens to those Taharis? So Rabbi Yehuda Omer Daya Shaita, Rabbi Yehuda says, in her case, we're going to say it's enough to declare her tamei from the time when she saw the blood. In other words, we're not going to be concerned as we would with a regular Jewish woman, that you have this me'es la'es and the p'kida l'p'kida thing. You're going to say that you're going to say that no, only the taharis that she touches from when she actually sees the flow of blood are going to be tamei. And the reason behind it is, Rashi explains, Rabbi Yehuda says like this, the whole concept of me'es la'es is based on that the blood may have started coming out of the uterus as much as 24 hours earlier, and she just didn't realize it until now because she doesn't realize it until it actually comes out of her body. Well, 24 hours ago, she was still a goyter. So therefore, therefore the blood that came out of her, even if blood had started coming out of her uterus at that time, it still wouldn't make her tummy. And once we say that, then listen, when we can say that we apply the me'es la'es rule, the 24-hour rule, then we're going to do that. But over here, 24 hours ago, she was a goyter. So therefore, we're not going to create a new gzera and say that, okay, it goes back to the time that she toveled. We're not going to do that. And therefore, we're not going to do m'pkida l'pkida either, because again, those two things go together. Let's draw out the scenario a little bit differently. We're not going to say that. So let's say at 12 o'clock she toveled and became a giyotis. At 3 o'clock she did a bedikah. At 5 o'clock she actually became nida. So in principle, then we might have said that maybe she's Tomei Lamachreya back to 3 o'clock when she last did the Bedikah. But no, now she says we're not going to do that because the fact is we can't apply the Esla'es rule because 24 hours ago she was a Goita. Therefore, we're not going to apply a partial 24-hour rule and we're not going to apply the rule of Mepkid of Mepkidim. And Tosfos points out, I mean, listen, obviously there's not even a reason to think that we would apply Mesles. Obviously, it's pretty obvious that 24 hours ago she was a Goita. Reb Yossi is sitting in the Braise, is going to disagree with Reb Yehuda. He's still not going to say that we would apply Mesles, but he would say we would apply as much of it as possible. Namely, according to him, we would apply it back to 12 o'clock or 3 o'clock as the case may be. So Rabbi Yehuda says Dayashaita. Rabbi Yossi Maharei Kacholam Nashim. Rabbi Yossi says no. We consider her like any other Jewish woman. Or Metamim Me'es La'es Mepkidah L'Pkidah. So we apply the Me'es La'es rule, or we apply the Mepkidah L'Pkidah rule. So we say that if she tovled at 12 and there was no bedika in between, and she saw a flow of blood at 5, we are going to say that Midrabanan all taras that she handled between 12 and 5 are going to be Tomei Misafik. And we are also going to say that if she did a bedikah at 3, then any taras that she handled between 3 and 5 are going to be tamei misafik. So he says that, so unlike Rabbi Yehuda, he's saying we're going to apply as much of the rule as possible. Not 24 full hours, obviously, but whatever of the 24 hours or the time back to the last bedikah we could apply. So all of that is not really relevant to our sugya. We're just bringing that because that's the first half of a Braisa, where the second half, the continuation of the Braisa, is relevant over here and is what Rav Papa Bar Shmuel is bringing as a contradiction against Rav Yechonon. So the Braisa continues, Osricha lahamtin gimel chadashim. Here's another point. When a woman becomes a Giyotis, she would have to wait 3 months before she marries a Jew, in order, as we learned in Yevamos, because we want to be able to distinguish when she has a baby, if she becomes pregnant and has a baby, we want to know whether that baby was conceived before or after her gebur. So 3 months is because babies might be born premature, by as much as 3 months premature, they might be born. Now, a baby might be born healthy and viable after 6 months or after 9 months. So we need that 3 months in order to be able to make that distinction. Give her Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi matila orasol nasa miyan. And Rabbi Yossi says that no, she'd be allowed to marry right away for reasons that we're going to explain soon in the Gemara. The point being that the Gemara is assuming, Rapapa Bar Shmuel is assuming for purposes of his question that the Giyotis and the Shvuya are basically the same situation. With both of them, the concern is, did they have relations with Goyim? In the case of the Giyotis, it might have been voluntary. In the case of the Shvuya, it would have been by force. But whatever the case, Rabbi Yehuda seems to be concerned about that, and therefore he requires the Giyotis to wait for 3 months. Why are we saying that in the case of a Shvuya, are we saying that he's not concerned about that, that he's not concerned that she may have been raped by the Goyim? Tosfos points out that, in other words, the point of the question is that the Gemara is going to say soon that with a Giyotis, she knows in advance that she's planning to become a Giyotis, therefore we could say that during that time, she's more careful to avoid relationships with Goyish men. But Rabbi Yehuda is saying Tzricha Lahamtin Gimel Chadashim. Wouldn't it be all the more so in the case of a Shvuya, where she doesn't even have that ability to avoid such things because she's in captivity and she's always at the mercy of the Goyim who capture her? So that's the question. And how is it that Rabbi Yochanan is saying Rabbi Yehuda would say we're not concerned at all that she was raped, when based on this it sounds like Rabbi Yehuda should be very concerned. Amale, sort of Yosef answers, still Giyotis Ashvuya Karamis. How are you bringing a contradiction between a Giyotis and a Shvuya? The difference is Giyotis Lo Minter Anafsha, Shvuya Minter Anafsha. The difference is that after all, Giyotis is not necessarily careful to hold herself back from having relations with Goyim. After all, she's a Goita, she's allowed to at that point. So therefore, now that she became a Giyotis, Rabbi Yehuda is going to require her to wait 3 months. Whereas a Shvuya, fine. On the one hand, she's not free to refuse them, but on the other hand, she's going to take every possible step to avoid it, so that to avoid them raping her, and therefore we could say that Yehuda would say that not necessarily was she, and he wouldn't require her to wait 3 months, and he would say that she'd still be allowed to marry the kohen. In fact, Tosfos points out we're actually talking about earlier in the Gemara. We said in the Mishnah and earlier in the Gemara, we said that these dinim are, we're talking about a katana, a girl below the age of bas mitzvah. But so Tosfos points out you have like this. There's a point when she's very young, and there's a point where she's very young and she's not going to be willing to. She's not going to be willing to go along with Bia anyway. And when she gets older, then conceivably she would. But at that point, she knows already. Look, I'm a Jewish woman. I don't want to be with a goy. In particular, I don't want to lose my marriage prospect, my prospective marriage prospects with a kohen. And therefore I'm gonna try being shomer myself, and try to avoid giving them any opportunity to take advantage of me. So even though we're talking about a katana, we can still say that that applies. Okay. But the Gemara says, V'romi shvuya shvuya. Fine, you're right. Maybe we can't bring a contradiction within Rabbi Yehuda's opinion with a giyotis versus a shvuya. Maybe he would say that a giyotis is less likely to worry about the consequences of a liaison with a goyish man, because after all, she's still a goyta. It's perfectly allowed for her. And therefore, he's going to say that once she becomes a giyotis, she has to wait 3 months, as opposed to a shvuya. Fine, but we can show a contradiction within Rabbi Yehuda's opinion about a shvuya herself. The Tanya, we have another braisa. Where if this woman was a giyoris or was converted, or shvoya who was freed, or shivcha who was freed from slavery, where they were older, yeseris abnos gimel shanim yemechad, and they were older than 3 years old, where then again there's a concern about the stolim. In all those cases, they have to wait for 3 months before they're allowed to marry a yid. Give it Rabbi Yehuda. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. So even though we're talking about the girl who's a katana, she's not able to become pregnant, but nevertheless, we're still going to say loy plug. We're still going to say that we don't make a distinction within that zera. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying that across the board, we always have the three month rule. Tosfos discusses at some length why that should be. And Tosfos says that maybe actually not. Maybe in fact we have a different girsa, and Rabbi Yehuda would be saying this only with a gdola who's actually capable of becoming pregnant. Anyway, and the braisa continues, Rabbi Yossi matir la'oris l'nasa miyad, and Rabbi Yossi allows her to get to be in a skadish and to be married right away. He doesn't hold of the 3 months. So we see clearly that Rabbi Yehuda says that a shvuya, there is a real concern that she was raped and became pregnant. So how could Rabbi Yochanan be saying about Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in our Mishnah that he holds no, we don't have to be concerned about that at all, and she's even allowed to marry a kohen? Rabbi Yehuda seems to be contradicting himself. Ishtik. So Rabbi Yosef was quiet, and he didn't have an answer to that. Omalei, then he says to the Papa Bar Shmuel, Midi Shmiya Lach Baha. Have you heard anything from your Rebbeim that might help to answer this contradiction? Amalei, so Rav Papa Rav Shmuel says, Hochi Amar Rav Sheshes, Shira'ua Shinivala. Rav Sheshes says that in fact we're talking about where with a shvuya, you have a suffix maybe whether she was raped. And Rabbi Yehuda would be saying, according to Rabbi Yechanan, that there's no concern about that. But here we're talking about where we actually saw that she was raped by them. Now already, it's not a matter of a suffix. Now we know it's a vadai. Now the question is only if she became pregnant. That is where Rabbi Yehuda would be saying that now once she's freed, she has to wait 3 months, because if she has a baby, we need to know whether it was from the goy or whether it was from a yid. Okay, well, the question is, Yochem, I time with Rabbi Yossi. Well, then why does Rabbi Yossi say that she doesn't have to wait 3 months? Again, all of this is within Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. It's within Rabba's opinion that we said before, that even Rabbi Yehuda says it's only a matter of Choyte Nisker, then there's no question. You could say Rabbi Yehuda is not saying it's a given that she was raped. He's just being choshesh to it, and he's saying only when choter nisker are we going to ignore that possibility. And Rabbi Yossi would be saying that, and Rabbi Yossi maybe then would be saying that that we're not concerned across the board. But if you renew Shanimala, then why not? And the answer is Amar Rabba, Kasav Rav Yosi, Ishim Zana, Meshameshes B'moich, Shaloi Tisamba. And the answer is Rav Yosi would hold that when a woman is Mizana, or in this case, a Shavuya, was raped by the Goyim, she is going to afterwards turn over. She's going to do physical exercises to avoid becoming pregnant, to get out as much of the, not physical exercises, that's too matter. Meshameshes B'moich, she's going to have relations using Moich, Shalotis Abur, so she doesn't become pregnant. So therefore, Rav Yosi says that she'll take such steps, and therefore it's far less likely that she became pregnant. Rashi uses the expression, it means that after they had relations, she's going to use Moich to wipe out the Zera. Later on Daf Lamed Tes, we're going to talk about this matter of Meshameshes B'Moich. There, Rashi explains it differently. There, we're going to talk about the Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos on the subject of whether it means that she uses Moich to begin with. She puts in some Moich in order to absorb the Zera before she ever has relations versus using it afterwards to clean herself up. So here, Rashi, so further on and Daf Lamed Tes, in a different context, Rashi explains that it means that she puts it in ahead of time. Here, Rashi explains it means that she puts it in after the fact in order to absorb the zera and avoid becoming pregnant. It's obviously not 100% reliable, but she's gonna make that effort. Rashi and Tosfos will discuss there on Daf Lamed Tes why it is that Tosfos holds differently than Rashi. As far as the fact that Rashi says here differently, that he says that she uses it afterwards, the Chassam Sofer has an explanation on it along the lines of that here we're talking about where she doesn't know, there's no way to know in advance when they might try something with her, so therefore she really has no choice but to use Moish afterwards. Anyway, so therefore Rav Yosi says that she is going to do that, and therefore that reduces the chances of pregnancy a great deal, and therefore we have less reason to make her wait 3 months. Okay, well then the question is, why does it apply to all three? Bishrei Megiyuris, so I understand by a woman who becomes a Giyuris, given the dice of the Igiyuri, she knows in advance she plans to become a Giyuris. Ninter Anafsha, so we can say she's going to try to guard herself, so she's going to make herself available, some Moich, so in order to reduce her chances of becoming pregnant, because she knows in the near future she plans to become a Giyuris, and she doesn't want to have to wait 3 months after that to get married. And Shvuya Nami, Dela Yadu Hecha Mamtuba, and a Shvuya doesn't know where they're taking her in the future, so she thinks that at some point her captors may bring her to a Jewish community, and the Jews there will do pidyon shvuyim. So the same thing, she's going to be careful, even during the time that she's under their control, she's going to try to arrange herself some moich in order to avoid becoming pregnant. So we can understand why Rav Yosi is saying that there's a good chance of that, and therefore we don't have to worry about her being pregnant. She doesn't have to wait 3 months. And Shivcha Nami Deshamim Dibana. And in the case of a Shivcha, fine, we can say that many times she'll have heard in advance from her master that he's planning to free her, and therefore, again, from then, she's going to be careful and use Moich for this purpose. Ella, but we have to consider, there's various reasons why a Shivcha Pnanis, we're talking about, of course, might be freed, might be freed from slavery, and one of them is Ella Yotze B'Shein V'Ayin. One of them might be that if her master knocks out her eye or her tooth or any one of 24 Rosha Evarim that are listed in Gemara Kiddushin. So then, that kind of thing is an all of a sudden thing. So Mike Lamema, then what are you going to say? You're going to say that in advance she's using Moich because she knows in the future there's going to be Shein V'Ayin and she's going to go free because of that? It's impossible to know that. So why would we, and yet, Rav Yosi is saying across the board that a Shivcha does not have to wait 3 months. Why not? On the face of it, it should depend on what the circumstances were, why her master emancipated her. So you're going to say maybe in fact Rav Yosi would make that distinction. Maybe he would say there's a distinction between something that could have been predicted in advance versus memela, something that all of a sudden happened. No. You're going to say that maybe, in fact, the Yossi would not say his rule by the Mela. Maybe he would say that you do have to wait 3 months. No. Consider the case of a woman who was anusa, who was mefuta, which is something that also happens as an all of a sudden thing. It's not something that was pre-planned. The Tanya, and we learn in a braisa, anusa mefuta tzrichas laham to gimo chadoshim divir Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi matila orisam anasam yan. And we see that you have the same machloikas there, where Rabbi Yehuda says that she has to wait 3 months before she can get married, and Rabbi Yossi doesn't require it. So we see that Rabbi Yossi is not distinguishing between something that happens in Mela, something that happens as a one-off, as an all-of-a-sudden unpredictable thing, versus something that could have been predicted. So then, why not? If you're saying that it's a matter of using Moich after, then she wouldn't have known to do that, because she wouldn't have known to do it, because in the future she might be emancipated because of Shein V'ayin, or because in the future she might be Anusa or Mefuta. So no. Ella, Amar Rabba, Kasav Rabbi Yossi, Isha Mezana Mishapechas Kedosh Shalot Yisabel. The answer is, Rabbi Yossi says, it's not a matter of using Moich. It's a matter of that she'll Mishapechas, she'll turn over, meaning she'll do physical exercises, again, in order to cause the Zera to leak out and avoid becoming pregnant. Now that's something that she can do. So that's something she can do even in a case of Memela. So in other words, the idea is that even a shifcha could conceivably be doing that. She has nothing to lose by doing it, basically. The same thing, a woman who was nenas or was mefuta could do that after the onus or after the pituri, and there's a good chance that she did that. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi is saying that we're not going to make her wait 3 months after that. The idach. So what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He says, Chayshin and Shemalai Nefta, Yafa Yafa. Sure, that's a possibility. But on the other hand, if we're talking about that rather than using Moish, that has a much lower likelihood of being successful unless she does it right. And she may not do it right. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda considers that there's a higher likelihood that in that case she became pregnant. So that is why Rabbi Yehuda would say that in those cases she has to wait the 3 months. As opposed to Rabbi Yossi says that she doesn't. Actually, Tosfos says that in the case of the Shifcha, who was freed because of Shein V'ayin, even Rabbi Yossi would agree that she has to wait 3 months because she has no reason to be mishapet after at all. She has no particular reason to think that in the future she's going to be freed, that she should have to be concerned about such things. On the other hand, other Rishonim say, I think the Ritzva says that even with her, she might, because look, what does she have to lose? It's not that difficult to be mishapet, and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi considers that it's easy enough to do it properly, and therefore that's fine. Okay. Anyway, the point is that Rabbi Yehuda is being consistent with his own opinion, even according to Rabbi Yochanan. He's saying that if we don't know that she was Nival, then we can assume that she wasn't. And Rabbi Yochanan will say, Rabbi Yehuda will say that across the board. But if we knew her, she Nivala, that's when Rabbi Yehuda will say that she has to wait 3 months. Okay. The Mishnah had said, Shinema Valoya Osin Onish Yonish Vahola. The second half of the Mishnah had talked about where, going back to the case of Onus and Mefata, where the woman, where the girl that he was Onus and Mefata, is somebody for whom he'd be Chayav Misa. So, for example, his daughter or his granddaughter or his stepdaughter or what have you. So then, his wife's daughter, that is, then we said that then he then come live with the Rabbimine, he's Chayav Misa, and therefore he's not paying the Knas, Shinema Valoya Osin Onish Yonish for them. Because the Pasuk says, if there's not an Osin, then he'll be penalized financially, meaning the case that we talked about where a man hits a pregnant woman and causes her to miscarry, where then if he didn't kill her, then he has to pay for the value of the babies, but if he killed her, then he's potter because he's Chayav Misa. And we talked about previously the machlokes of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, whether that applies only b'mezid, only when he's actually Chayav Misa, or does it apply even the Shoigig, because potentially he would have been Chayav Misa, etc. So the Gemara asks, Vahoma Hocha Nafta? So you're telling me we learn this concept of Kamna with the Rabbimine from that Pasuk? Mehosim Nafta, we learn it from an entirely different Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Kidei Lishosai, that when a person gets Malchus, you punish him according to his wickedness, which implies, Mishum Risha Achas Atamachaibe, Viyatamachaibe, Mishum Shtei Rishoyas. You can only be Machaibe because of one wickedness, not two. In other words, from that we learn there's no double jeopardy. There's no two punishments for the same action. Now, by the way, there's a Tosfos elsewhere that points out, we're not talking about, for example, when a person is over on multiple lavin, that he shouldn't get multiple malchus. That, of course, he does. We're talking about when you have two different kinds of punishments, as in this case, Nisa and Mammon. So from that pasuk, on the face of it, we learn that you don't do both of them. So why do we need the pasuk below Yosin? And the answer is, we need both of them. Chodem Nisa Mammon, v'chodem malchus Mammon. One tells us that if there's Misa and Mammon, as in the case over there with the pregnant woman, if he kills her, or in the case of on Mishnah, where he had relations with his own daughter. So then we're saying that we do only the Misa and not the Mammon. B'chadar b'malchus and Mammon. And the other one, the Kedei Shasei, teaches us the same concept when it comes to Malchus and money, that if he did something that would make him Chayev Malchus, as well as paying money, then he only gets Malchus and doesn't pay the money, which earlier in the parak there was a discussion about that. As it relates to our Mishnah, how is it not our Mishnah, the previous Mishnah, where the previous Mishnah had said that if the woman is a mamzeres, for example, where there's malchus for having relations with her, then we said he pays the knas. So how is that? Why doesn't he get malchus instead? And the Gemara had brought up a couple of possibilities that maybe in fact he doesn't get malchus. Maybe he only gets malchus only if there's no knas, namely she's a begeres, or maybe there's a difference whether they gave masra for the malchus or not, or maybe there's a machlokes from Meir and the Chachamim on that subject, which the Gemara is going to bring again in another line. So utzricha, and in fact the Gemara says we would need to be told two psukim, we couldn't learn one from the other. D'yashmin and misa umamim. If we were told that concept when it comes to misa and umamim, you would say, you know why you only give him the misa and don't make him pay money? After all, he's losing his life. That's a pretty stringent, stringent punishment. So it's enough for him. It's enough kapara for him for that. You're not going to make him pay money as well. Avon Malkus and Mammon, the Lekka Ibud Neshama, when it comes to Malkus and money, he's not losing his life. So maybe not. Maybe it's not a harsh enough punishment, and maybe we should make him have to pay money as well. So the E Ashmin and Malchus and Mammon. On the other hand, if we only have the pasuk Kedei Rishasai about Malchus and money, you would say, on the contrary, Mishum Delechami Risure. You know why? You know why? You're saying you can get away with only Malchus because it wasn't such a stringent Isser. After all, we see the Torah itself was more lenient on that Isser and prescribed only Malchus, not Misa for it. So therefore, we could say that it's enough to give him one punishment. But when it comes to Misa and Mammon, which is a more stringent Isser, it's a harsher Isser. After all, we see the Torah itself is much more machmer on it. So maybe not. Maybe we should be further machmer on him and make him get both penalties, the Misa and the Mammon. So therefore, we need both. Okay. The Gemara asks, now we learned previously in the Perek that Reb Meir says a person could get Malchus and pay money. According to him, for example, in the first Mishnah of our parent, if the woman that he was Ma'anes or Mefata was Mamzeres, then, and she was a Naira, then Reb Meir is going to say that he gets Malchus and he has to pay the Knas. So, and we discussed a couple of angles on why that would be so. But anyway, Tauti Lomeli, so according to Reb Meir, why do we need two psukim? And the answer is Chodem Miso Mammon, v'Chodem Miso Malchus. Because according to him, one is talking about if a person did something that makes him Chayev Misa and Mammon, then you only give him the Misa, like it says in our Mishnah. And the other one is if he did something that makes him Chayev Misa, as well as the same action would make him Chayev Malchus, then you only give him the Misa. You don't, in addition, give him the Malchus. But in fact, the Meir would say that Misa and that Malchus and money, you would make him do both. Okay, and again, utzricha, and we would say, according to the Meir, you need both psukim. The Iyashmin and Miso Mammon, because again, you would say, if we were told only by Misa and money, you would say, Mishum the Chodeb Gufa, the Chodeb Mammon, Eloy Abdin. Maybe we can't penalize him for the same thing in two different ways, one involving his body by executing him, and the other one with his money by taking away money from him. Maybe we can't do that. Abu the Miso Malchus, the Aidi by Aidi Gufa, but Misa and Malchus both involve his body. So maybe you should say, in effect, we're talking about it's like one drawn out, protracted death. So maybe we should do both. Give him Malchus and then follow up with executing him. So therefore, we need to be told that not. V'yeshmin and Misa Malchus, and vice versa. If we were told that about Misa and Malchus, that you only do one, you would say on the contrary, the tarot of the gufa le'abdunan. Maybe on the contrary, you can't give him two punishments that affect his own body. But Misa and Mammon, where one affects his body and the other one his Mammon, Eman Nevidbe, maybe you could do both to them, to him. And therefore, the mayor would say we need both psukim to tell us that. But Rameyu would still say that if it was Malchus and money, where you don't have either of those things, you can't call it Misa Richter, because after all, he's only getting Malchus, he's not getting killed, and it is two separate things, one's Malchus and one's money, then maybe you could make him undergo both of those. A few days ago, we learned that according to Rabbah, maybe that would only be by Knas, and then we said the possibility that maybe it would apply across the board. Okay. Since we're talking about that, we have psukim that tell us about this concept of double jeopardy, and we're saying that in the case of Misa, that a person gets only Misa and not Mammon, because Kam Limited Amimine, so the Gemara digresses to talk about several other psukim that seem to tell us somewhat the same thing, and why do we need those psukim? So you have a pasuk that says, "Volo sitchu koifer l'nefesh ritzeach." The pasuk says, "Don't take a koifer, don't take a monetary payment, regarding the life of a ritzeach." So lomali, what do we need this pasuk for? On the face of it, we learn it from what we're saying in our Mishnah that you don't make him pay money as well as give him Misa. And the answer is that's what it means. No, what it means is the Torah is warning you, don't think that you can take a koifer from him and that way exempt him from Misa. So that pasuk is telling us a different concept. Our Mishnah is telling us the pasuk Goloya also to say that you don't do both, give him Misa and make him pay money. That pasuk Goloya is saying don't think that he can commute his Misa by paying money instead. No, he can't do that. Okay, what about next pasuk there continues Lo koifer lonus al umiklotei lomali. The next pasuk continues, don't take a koifer regarding running away to the umiklot. So again, it sounds like the pasuk is saying don't make him run away when he killed b'shogeg to the orei miklot, as well as don't take money from him as well as for compensation, as well as send him to the orei miklot. So again, lomali, what do we mean that for? Again, don't we have the various psukim we brought so far? And again, the point is the pasuk is not saying that don't do both. The pasuk is saying don't allow it to substitute. Don't think that you can take money from him and thereby exempt him from golus. So not just so that you don't make him do both. That we learn from also, from Kedavish also. But the psukim, I'm telling you, don't think that he can get away with money instead of Misa or get away with money instead of golus. And the Gemara says Utsricha, and we would need Utsrichi, and we need both those psukim. Again, we couldn't have learned one from the other. De'ieshmin and Mezid, if we were told that by the case of a killer of a Mezid, you would say, you know why? You can't commute it with a monetary payment, Mishum Dechomer Yisure, because after all, it was a very stringent issue. He killed somebody of a Mezid, and when he needs to be executed. Abel Shoigig Dechomer Yisure, but a Shoigig, it wasn't such a stringent issue. A Maloy, so maybe not. The Iyashmin and Shurigit, maybe you would think that you could get away with money instead of golos, because after all, it wasn't such a harsh issue. So Amaloy, so you would think that not, and the pasuk has to tell you otherwise. The Iyashmin and Shurigit, and if you said it only by Shurigit, you would say, again, Mishum Deleka Ibud Neshama. The fact is, so you would say, you know why? You can't commute it for money, because it's not such a, after all, you're not causing the guy to lose his life. You're only sending him off to the Orient. What? So therefore, we're going to say that the Torah doesn't want you to commute it for money. Let him go into Golos. We're not losing so much from that. Abel Mezid de Ike Ibu Neshama, but if he killed the Mezid, we're going to say, huh? How could we be taking his life? Shouldn't we do everything possible to save a life and therefore allow us to take money instead? So the aim was, you would think that not, maybe you could. And therefore, the pasuk needs to tell you that don't think that way. Okay. Here's another pasuk that's relevant to this. The pasuk says, the continuation from the previous psukim says the land will not be atoned for the blood that was spilled in it, ki in the dam shorchei, only with the blood of the one who spilled it, meaning in other words that if a person killed, then he has to be executed. Nothing else can be done. So what is it? What lomali? What is that pasuk telling us? If it's telling us that you're not allowed to commute it for money, we already have that from the earlier pasuk. from Loisik Kukovra? And the answer is Mibola the Chiditanya. That we use to learn a different, to learn a different din that it says in a Braisa. Now we know at the end of Parashas Shoftim, we have the mitzvah of Egla Arufa, that if we find a dead body outside the city and we don't know who killed him, then we have to measure to the nearest city, and the nearest city has to bring an Egla Arufa and so forth. So now the Braisa says, Minayin Shemis Alpha Egla Vakakach Nimsa Ahurig. How do we know that if the Egla was decapitated, the whole procedure was done, and then the killer was found, Minayin Shem Pochunose? How do we know that we don't let him go free? We don't say, look, the Egla Arufa was meant for a kapara, and the kapara has been accomplished, therefore we don't need to execute the guy. No, that is why the Pasuk is saying that no, the land won't be atoned for unless the blood of the killer himself is shed. So even though the Egla Arufa has been done, nonetheless, if you find the guy, you still have to execute him. So that we learn, from this extra Pasuk. Okay, well then, the Pasuk there says at the end of the story of the Egla Arufa, it says, you should remove the guilt of innocent blood from among you, which on the face of it means that you have to do that, you have to accomplish that by executing the killer if you find him. In fact, Tosfos points out over here that on Rashi, on the Pasuk says that this that we just said, that you have to kill the guy regardless, even if he did the Egla Arufa. Rashi on the Pasuk actually says we learn it from these words, V'atat v'ar adam anokim mitzvecha. But here the Gemara is saying differently. Here the Gemara is saying that we actually learn that from the pasuk, from a different pasuk in Parshas Masay, and rather va'ata tavara doma nokim kibecha is teaching us a different thing. So what is that pasuk teaching us? And the answer is mibola l'chiditanya. We use that to teach us this that it says in a braisa, minayim l'mosim b'sayif shuhum ratzav. How do we know when a person is executed by Beis Din, by the sword, how do we know that that has to be done by chopping off his head, by having the sword at his neck? Meaning, now you have like this. We know the Torah tells us that there are four misses Beis Din, and one of them, Hereg, is there's two kinds of people who get hereg. One of them is a murderer, and the other one are the people of the Iran Adams. So we know the Gemara learns elsewhere from Gzeira Shava that the method to be used in the case of a Ritzeach is Saif. But how do we know the Saif is to be used at the neck? Maybe, for example, you stab him in the heart or something. So Talmud Lomah, va'atza tivara adama noki mikvecha. That is why you have this pasuk regarding the Egla Arufa, meaning hukshu kol shayf chedamim la Egla Arufa, meaning the Torah is giving you a hekesh between murder and the Egla Arufa. Ma lahalon minat sagar. So just like the Egla Arufa, how is it killed? By decapitating it, by chopping off its head. That is where we learn that the shayf chedamim has to be executed by chopping off his head. Well, then, in that case, if you're going to learn like that, then you should say that it should be exactly the same. By the Egla Arufa, you don't use a regular sword or knife or something. You use a koifitz, which is a cleaver, the kind of thing that's used by butchers to chop up meat and bones. And umimul odef, and you're supposed to do it on the back of the neck of the animal. Oref in and of itself means the back of the head. Mul oref means the area below that, means the back of the neck. So afkan the kofet to me mul oref. Maybe then the equation would be that when we give somebody the misa, the hereg, means the same thing. They have to use a kofet and they have to do it on the back of the neck. And in fact, we know it's not like that. In fact, instead they use a sword and they do it from the front of the neck. So why not? So why the difference? Amr of Nachman, Amr of Babur. Because Omar Kra, we are half the Rebecha Kamercha, because after all, the Pasuk is we are half the Rebecha Kamercha, and even this guy who's being executed is Re'echa, because after all, his Misa is Makapa for him. Therefore, Brolo Misa Yafa, from that we learn that you always have to choose the easiest and least disfiguring possible death for him within the kind of death that the Torah says to give. So therefore, so Rashi explains when you use a sword and you chop off his head from beginning from the front, then he dies faster than he would if you use the koifetz and you did from the back. So that's misayafa. The Shikim Kubetis brings over here a couple of possibilities from one of them being brings from the Yad Ramah. who says similar to Rashi, that it's a cleaner kill, more so than a kofetz, which really disfigures the neck and the head. And the other possibility the Shitin Kubesis brings is that using a kofetz is more, it's not so much what the kofetz does to the body versus a sword, but it's more a matter of that it's a degrading thing to use a kofetz, which is something that you use to kill and to chop up animals. So that's why we say so because of the Ahaf L'Rech Kamoicha is why we say that the killing of the Ritzeach is not exactly like the Egla Arufa. But still, from the Pasuk, Bahat Tavara, Dominamikin Yikrebecha, we learn that it has to be in the same general area of the body, namely the neck. And Tosfos says, because after all, otherwise you would say that, for example, you stab him in the heart. That would also be Misa Yafe. He's going to die awfully quickly from that. But that wouldn't be, that then you wouldn't have the equation with the Egla Rufa. So therefore, that's why we come out with that it means beheading him, but it means doing from the front of the neck rather than from the back. Okay. And the Gemara is going to continue with a couple of other psukim that talk about these various dinim and what we learn and what we learn from those dinim, but that will continue in tomorrow's Shia Bez Hashem.